On this week's 51%, a jazz musician talks about contracting COVID-19.
Some have experienced death and others are sick. But I'm still going to focus on the positive and I want to teach people how to do that.
And three generations of women keep an olive farm in production in California. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
That this feeling is indeed cold love. Embroidering my heartstrings like a handmade glove. Good things come to those who wait.
That's Tara O'Grady. The subject of our first story as Dr. Sharon Ufberg returns with her 51% segment, Force of Nature. Initially, her interview was supposed to focus solely on jazz music and a book. But when her interviewee contracted COVID-19, the subject matter shifted. Ufberg speaks with Tara O'Grady, a self-acclaimed bliss ambassador. O'Grady, a former English teacher turned jazz blues singer, recording artist, and songwriter, has released 5 albums of jazz, blues, and folk music and performs worldwide with her band. She lives in New York City in Queens and shares how COVID-19 impacted her health and profession.
I really was hoping when we did this interview we were going to get to talk all about your bliss ambassador status, but I think it's first we should start really with finding out about how you're doing, your journey with the coronavirus, and what's happening with you since this whole pandemic began.
I live in Queens. It's only 10 minutes from Midtown Manhattan. I can actually see the Empire State Building from my apartment. Queens right now is the epicenter of the pandemic in America. I hear sirens every single day and night, so I started wearing earplugs in bed because I couldn't sleep. And I can't watch the news because I'm trying to stay positive. Even though I have the virus, part of fighting it is staying positive and not getting anxious or depressed by watching all the negative news. My last live performance at a jazz club in Manhattan was on March 10th. And then the day after that, all my gigs were canceled. Every musician I know had their gigs canceled. My fever began on March 24th. I have no idea how I got it. Could have, gotten it from anywhere, subway, gig, anyone. My fever lasted 21 straight days. It was low grade, so I didn't feel that I needed to go to a hospital. I didn't want to, when I knew so many others were rushing to the hospital. I've had shortness of breath and cough, all the symptoms of COVID-19. The nightmares were intense, frightening. I was too weak to even go outside for a walk. So I've been stuck inside, and that's really hard mentally. I even had a quarantine birthday. My birthday was April 11th, and I was alone in my apartment, and my parents had to leave a birthday cake at my doorstep. I'm finally on the mend after 4 weeks. I still have symptoms, but the fever's gone and my energy is slowly returning. I can't sing. I run out of breath, but I tried. I actually was able to drive to a food store yesterday and I tried singing in the car just because my mood was lighter and I couldn't even get through a verse. So I'm definitely not fully recovered.
Tara, well, it sounds very scary, and I'm so happy to hear that you're starting to recover. What effect have you seen this have on, your band, the community of musicians that you normally interact with? You said all the gigs were canceled, but are many of the musicians, full-time musicians such as you, are they all, out of work? Has many of them also contracted the virus? What's the status of the people that you and your, have normally spend all your time with?
So we're all full-time musicians. We work, pretty much every single day and at gigs, a couple gigs a day. Some of them teach music, so they've moved their teaching to online. I don't teach music, so I'm unemployed. I applied for unemployment just last week. Many of our senior musicians in the jazz community have been dying from the virus, and even though they were up there in age in the 70s and 80s, we weren't ready to lose them. They were healthy, and they could still perform, and they were still teaching the younger generation of jazz musicians. So every day I see a post of someone who has passed online, and so I just stop looking at anything, because it's so upsetting. Friends and parents of friends have been dying. We can't attend the funerals because we're not allowed to gather. All my tours have been canceled to Ireland, Spain. I was supposed to be in Spain this week. Everything canceled through September. You know, we're used to performing almost every single day in Manhattan and going on tour and festivals, concerts. But we're all unemployed now. Many of my musician friends and my band members are performing online for tips, you know, for their PayPal accounts, because they can't pay their rent or buy food starting next month. You know, they basically lived gig to gig. And I was able to do one online performance March 19th, and my fans put tips in my online tip jar. But then I got sick and I couldn't perform. I had no energy. I couldn't even sing. I couldn't even get out of bed. But my bass player took a job as a truck driver because, you know, he's got children, and he has to pay his rent and put food on the table. So, you know, this is what people have to do. But I've been sick, so I haven't been able to go out and get a job. And besides, we're in quarantine.
Are there any services that you're finding that are helping musicians in particular, or people in the Queens community, because you have been hit so hard? I mean, are you seeing, you know, organizations coming out that are able, that you're able to go to for help? Are they accessible? Are they available? You know, you hear a lot of things on the news and TV about all these nonprofits that are out there doing good. Are they available to, you know, you're someone that's really in it. Have you been able to find things to meet some of your unmet needs or some of the needs of your community?
Actually, yes. One of the jazz clubs that I perform at, Winnie's Jazz Club in the Refinery Hotel, they have a restaurant connected to them, Parker and Quinn, and they've been providing 1,000 meals a day for free to anyone who worked there, so that they could get fed for them and their families. And also, I just found out about the Louis Armstrong Foundation has an emergency musician relief fund. They had $1 million to distribute to New York City-based jazz musicians, because New York is the center for jazz in the entire world, and this is where all the musicians live. And I applied for that grant, and I was awarded just yesterday $1,000. So that's going to be helpful for putting towards rent. So there are some arts relief grants happening across the country, and as soon as we see anything, we share it online and tell all our friends, because, you know, I know all kinds of artists in New York that are also visual artists and dancers, not just musicians, and we're all struggling right now.
It's like this mix of these very terrible circumstances and then these moments of great acts of kindness. And, you know, the image of your parents bringing your birthday cake to your door is so touching and also so sad. Are you able to, you know, FaceTime with your parents? Are they in good health? I mean, obviously, they're older, so they're in a more vulnerable age category. Have they been able to stay well through this?
Thank God, yes. My parents are healthy. My dad's been going to the food store and wearing his mask and his gloves and sanitizing everything before, you know, as soon as he gets home, and then he delivers the food to me. So he calls it Meals on Wheels. He's feeding me. And my mom is actually a private home caregiver, so she's taking care of a patient every single day who's in her mid-90s, the patient. So she's being very cautious, because obviously that patient is in the age group, but we're all affected. There's young people as well getting it. My fans, when they found out that I lost all my jobs, they put some money in my PayPal, and they paid for my April rent and all my bills for April. So that just blew my mind. And every night at 7 o'clock, I get really happy when I hear the clapping. New York City is clapping for its essential workers and healthcare givers, and you can hear it outside your window. Even when my windows are closed, I can hear everyone clapping and cheering. And I listen to that, and also you can hear the birds singing, which is not something you get to hear in New York because of, you know, the usual sounds and noise of New York with airplanes going overhead and the subway going by. So hearing the birds, it has just been an amazing lift and joy. So, and you'd never think you'd be paying attention to birds in New York City, but we are.
It's actually one something everyone's noticing, that we're getting to hear all the sounds of nature much, you know, much more vividly than we have in years and years. So I want to move on just for a few more minutes. I don't want you to have to stay on for too long because I know you're not feeling 100%, but I want to talk to you about that memoir, that Migrating Towards Happiness, that you wrote last year. It's a beautiful memoir. And you wrote in the opening of the book that your purpose is to help people remember what they have forgotten, which is such a beautiful notion. And I'm just wondering, when this is all over and you've fully recovered and the world reopens again, what's on your agenda? You know, what are you hoping that you're going to do, or how do you see yourself helping people to remember what they have forgotten?
Well, I have learned that we are all divine expressions of light and love, and I'm going to be using my books and my music to teach people how to focus on positivity and the simple joys of being. And, you know, I see positivity even in negativity. So when, you know, when I wrote Migrating Toward Happiness, I was laid off from my job in 2011, but I decided to turn that into something positive and go on a road trip replicating my Irish grandmother's 1957 journey. So and I learned a lot on that journey, and I learned that you have to shift your perspective and you know, focus on the positive. You know, we're all struggling right now in so many ways, some more than others. Some have experienced death and others are sick. But I'm still going to focus on the positive, and I want to teach people how to do that. And like the simple joys, like I said, see, I've lived in this one neighborhood in Queens for the past 12 years, and I have never seen the birds that I'm seeing. I, on the moments when I can actually sit outside in the sun, when I'm feeling up for leaving my apartment, I've been seeing orioles and blue jays and cardinals and robins, and I've never seen these birds before. So, these moments, like I'm calling the pandemic the great pause, and we're pausing just to, reflect and see what it is that we want to focus on when we get back to the rhythm of our life. I don't want to get back to normal, because I think something this great that has affected the entire globe, we shouldn't go back to normal. So I'm hoping I can teach people how to stay positive, stay joyful, focus on the simple things, and find bliss, because we always have joy at our core. And I try to teach my audiences that even on a rainy day, the sun is still up there. It's behind the clouds. You just have to wait till the clouds pass, and they will pass, and the sun will come out again. So this is what I'm trying to help people remember.
I love that. Tara, if people want to listen to your music, read your book, find out more about you, can you share how they might do that during this time when people are really looking for ways to feel inspired and get a little joy and distraction from their quarantine?
Sure. They can, if you want to find my music, a lot of my songs have witty, funny lyrics and they're uplifting. It's at taraogradymusic.com. And you can also find my memoir, Migrating Toward Happiness, there. There's a link on that site. And people have been reading my book in quarantine and telling me that it's lifting their spirits.
Fantastic. That's Tara O'Grady, jazz singer, author, bliss ambassador. Thanks so much for being here and sharing your story and a little bit of inspiration as well. You take care. And this is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in California. And here's Tara O'Grady performing I Want to Go to There. It's about all the places she wants to go. And she says being in quarantine made her want to travel all the more. Plus, I think we could all use a little pick-me-up.
Coffee shops with books and chocolate lollipops. Heartbreak hotel where there's no heartbreak to tell. Kitchens with freshly baked scones, bars in Honolulu with umbrella drinks and a new smell. Hot air balloon ride with Sean Connery. African safari on the Serengeti. Orient Express with a murder mystery. I want to go to
The California gold rush may be over, but in the Sierra foothills, it's still possible to strike it rich. Producer Pamela Lawrence spent a day learning how to harvest olives and press them into golden olive oil.
I recently took a drive out to Murphy's, California, a small town in the foothills of the Sierra Mountains. Murphy's is a former gold mining settlement known back in 1848 as Murphy's New Diggings, or Murphy's Camp, after the brothers John and Daniel Murphy established a trading post and gold mining operation in the area. I went there to strike some gold of my own and found it after spending the day with Fran Barnsley. Fran is a 93-year-old woman with a long family history in California. Her grandfather was the first to arrive at the tail end of the American Civil War.
And my grandfather, they gave him a pass coming from the state where he came from on the east, and then he walked out here, and he just carried a rifle. But it's a printed thing with the state seal on it, because at that time, evidently, they were just taking people off, men off the road. So in order to give him free passage, he gave him this pass so they couldn't take him into the army.
Fran purchased property way up on a hill in Murphy's in 1993. after her home in nearby Avery burned down from a wildfire. Around 2008, when Fran was in her 80s, she bought 100 olive trees and planted them along her hillside. It was with those first trees that Fran's farm was started. There are now close to 300 olive trees. The fruit is harvested and pressed into oil by three generations of women. I reached out to Fran's granddaughter, Dana, who, along with all of her many farm chores, runs the social media accounts for Fran's farm. She invited me to see the olive operation and take part in a harvest weekend.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Dana and her mom, Janine, outfitted me in an olive-picking apron, which folds up from the bottom and clips at the waist to form a giant pocket.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
She's ready.
Drop it into the bucket. I'm really short, so I feel like it's going to be harder on me to do because I'm so low.
Oh, I get it. Okay,
yeah.
So you put them in there.
But you don't want this too
high. And then it comes out there. I see. Yeah. Into the bucket.
Then we were ready to walk down to the olive orchard.
So these are our olive trees. We have Mission Olives.
But it's amazing how on one tree, how many different colors you can get. It goes from green, 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 which are more bitter tasting, to the darker, where they're a little bit more creamy. One year, it was really bad. We didn't have anything because there are olive flies, and olive flies can take over the crop. And this is possibly what it looks like.
Oh.
They get in there, and they destroy the crop.
We needed to speak with Charlie Lortz, chief landscaper, to ask about the fly. If more than 10% of the crop has fly, the olives can't be pressed into oil.
How's it going?
Olives everywhere.
Yeah. Charlie, I'm pretty sure you can probably confirm this. Is this fly? I broke one open. I saw like a little...
Yeah, we found a couple with flies.
Just a few.
Yeah, but hardly any.
Yeah.
Relieved over the news about the fly, it was time to pick.
Does it matter what size they are, or we're just picking everything?
Pick them all.
Pick them all.
Okay. What's the technique?
Well, you just get the branches down like this, and you get these guys over in here like this, and you just go like this and strip them off.
Once our aprons were full, it was time to unclip the pockets, dump the olives into buckets, and take them back up to the barn for pressing. The manual for the machine was all in Italian, so Dana had to figure it out on her own.
So what we're doing right now is we're going to get the olives ground up into the mixer and let it mix for about 30, 45 minutes to get it all broken down.
That gave me time to go in the house to speak again with the matriarch of the family. I wanted to know, why olives?
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure why. I said I didn't want to do grapes because everybody else is doing grapes. The Mission olive tree is the old basic tree of olives from Italy. And they said it was very hardy and it would take altitude. Altitude was my biggest problem because I'm at 29, almost 3,000 feet up here.
I asked Fran if she had always liked olives.
Well, I'll have to tell you a cute story because I do. Olives played a big part in my sister and I growing up at the table. Our family was very formal, and we ate formal meals. We loved olives, and of course, we'd get past the olive dish, and we'd try to get more than one. If nobody was watching, we'd take two, you know. And then we'd eat one, and right away there was a ridge underneath the table where the slot went for a table leaf. So we put the pits under there. So it always looked like we just got the one olive or two, you know. And we'd sneak extra ones under the table. So, yes, we both loved olives as kids. So
I learned that Fran has always been a bit spontaneous and likes to learn as she goes. It was like that with the olives.
Yeah, I never figured to have my own press, you know, and it's just kind of like overnight we heard and we went and we bought. So it's just boom. It was all kind of a guessing by golly. I can learn anything I want to, and I've sort of done that all my life.
Fran's daughter Janine joined us.
Did you tell her the reason why you planted the olives in the first place?
Will you come in and sit down, honey?
Did you tell her why you planted the olive trees in the first place?
Well, just so we could keep the house.
But the first year that we picked, we got 3.5 gallons. And so the whole family laughed. And we said, well, I'm not sure that her goal is reachable. And then the next year, it doubled. The next year, it doubled. And we had nothing last year because that's the way it goes sometimes. But the year before that, we had 50 gallons. So if you sell that retail, you're doing pretty good.
There's an old Italian saying, you plant grapes for your children, you plant olives for your grandchildren. It refers to the length of time it takes olive trees to reach maturity. Applied to Fran and her farm, I think the maxim means more about the spirit of generosity and family.
I just can't believe the kids have taken to this project so wholeheartedly. You know, they just love it. Even their spouses, when they can come and help.
And now seeing everybody loving the generational thing, I already love coming up here, and it's been a big thing that we talk about, is the family of generations. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the best part of it, just being up here. But it's just the family bonding.
So after spending the day with Fran and her family, I can honestly say I struck gold. Jima's gold.
Jima's gold. I'm Jima.
I went home with a bottle of olive oil and this little golden nugget about the secret to a happy life.
I think the secret is that I never ask for anything. I make my life. I make it do. I make it work. Yeah. But just very grateful for my life. It's been so wonderful.
Produced by Pamela Lawrence.
I get to be the last word.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Tina Rennick for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1607.